percussion, he tells them better.
Microphone.
I especially am going to try to make two points in this talk. The two points being the following. Point number one, it is interesting to consider state spaces of physical systems, in particular operate algebras, and they have a lot of structure of them. People have studied them in many, many different ways. And there is one structure on state spaces, which mathematicians in particular like quite a lot, but hasn't been considered in physics very much. There is a composition on certain kinds of state spaces. And that would be my first point. And then the second point I'm going to try to make is that when you work with operator algebras, there are essentially two different kinds of morphisms. There are the algebraic ones, and then there are the spatial ones. And they're not quite the same, and then sometimes the subtleties captured by the spatial morphisms are all the physics in a sense. So if you just work with algebraic morphisms, you might miss something. Okay, so these are the two points. The talk is essentially in three parts. It will mention many things we learn in school, which in some cases might mean graduate school, in some cases some Bourbaki-inspired high school. So I'm not going to define most of the things which are going to appear. But because of the modularity of the talk, if it will offer a chance to start following again, 1/3 into the talk and then 2/3 into the talk again. The first part of the talk would be, I'll have to tell you a little bit about elementary harmonic analysis on groups. And then after that, we'll look at some old stuff, in fact, 45-year-old stuff by Araki about algebraic quantum field theory. And then the last part of the talk will be about linear algebra. With that said, actually, there is a zeroth part of the talk. Because of the discussion of quantum logic, I felt compelled to say something about the relation of what I'm going to show you to lattices of projections. And so the state spaces are actually generalizations of lattices of projections. I'm going to be working with Vonnegut algebras. That's just for technical convenience. I understand them slightly better than sister algebras, which in my mind are slightly harder to work with. So M here is a Vonnegut algebra, and the state space is going to be denoted by M star plus. These are essentially the positive elements of the pre-dual. And what this is saying is that there is a generalization of the lattice structure on projections, which is a structure on state spaces. By state, I don't necessarily mean a state which is normalized to one. It doesn't really make sense to do that here. In fact, most of what I'm going to say actually applies also for unbounded states, which are called weights. But I'm going to say states most of the time. Here's what this says. If you have a state, when you have a state like this, you have its support. This is the minimal projection on which the state, on the complement of which the state is zero. And then if you have two of them, you can play this game of equivalence. This is a direct generalization of equivalence for projections. And two states are equivalent if there is a partial isometry between the two supports of the two states, but there is an additional condition of invariance. So as you can see, if we're just working with projections, we can do this, but then on states, we have an extension of that. So this is a natural extension, if you want, of quantum logic. We can also define what it means for one state to be smaller than the other. Now, this only really is different or makes sense, or is there any improvement on what we have in the type 3 case? I have to define here something called a normalizer. This is all the elements in the algebra which are invariant under the modulo group of the state. And then one state is smaller than another if this state is equivalent to a substate. But again, there is an invariance condition. Needless to say, this is a very good order. Now, this is not a lattice, but although I'm not going to say anything further on this, there is actually a map, order-preserving map, from this ordered set of states to, let me get this straight, the lattice of sigma finite projections in a non-separable abelian sister algebra, okay, canonical in the type 3 case. So there is some interest to that. Okay, so that's the relation to, that's why I think that's one of the reasons to consider states. Like it's a direct generalization of something. Okay, so now we have to go through the harmonic analysis. Oh boy. Okay, let me start with a locally compact group. We're going to have three or four slices like this. I have to explain what the operation which I'm studying is. On locally compact groups, we have a Haar measure and therefore integration theory. We have a left and right regular representations. Well, the left representation is this one and the right regular representation is that one. And when we have left and right von Neumann algebras generated by these representations, this is the weak quarter of the left representation and that's the left von Neumann algebra. And this is the weak quarter in the weak topology of the right regular representation and that's the right delta is the module operator of the group. These representations are very nice in the following sense. They're actually representations of both von Neumann algebras in standard form. So now I have to decide what that means. A representation of von Neumann algebra is in standard form, and all the representations you're going to see here are only of standard form. That's actually crucial for the construction. If, I can define it this way. If there is a anti-linear isometry on the Hilbert space, which switches the von Neumann algebra and its commutant, right? Oh, I didn't say that, but this here is precisely the commutant of that. And so in a sense, the von Neumann algebras, the algebras of observables, which are going to come up later, they are of the same size as their complement. Okay, the algebra and its complement are of the same size. Very different from quantum mechanics, where you have the bounded operators on some finite dimensional Hilbert space, and then the commutant is one. Just see, right? This is a very different story. And then I can say what the standard form is in a different way. A von Neumann algebra is in standard form represented on some Hilbert space if it has what is called a cyclic and separating vector, meaning the von Neumann algebra covers the whole Hilbert space, and nothing goes to zero. And then here is why this is nice. If we have a state. Well, now I'm actually abusing notation even further. I'm calling the state something which is not necessarily positive, but one of these things in the pre-dual is a linear combination of four states. So I can even do that. So element of the pre-dual, which I'm now going to start calling state, is of this form. It is just a given by two vectors, and the state is given by this form. And then if you have a positive state, then it is of this form. This is very unusual, compared again to ordinary quantum mechanics. States of vectors, so pairs of vectors. Well, states technically are vectors. Yeah? Just to give you an example, this is not something very complicated. If you take the group S3, the permutation of three elements, and you can compute what these two are. Explicitly, I spent half a day multiplying 6 by 6 matrices, and this is what came out of this. The left von Neumann algebra of S3 is essentially the 2 by 2 matrices. Times one on the second component plus a center, which is essentially an abelian von Neumann algebra. And then here is what the right regular right von Neumann algebra is. It's one times mu and then the center. Okay, so you can see why these two are of the same size. So if you want, this is quantum mechanics now. But here is the first difference. Here the M2 is sitting on the Hilbert space in a very special way, in such a way that the commutant is also there in the same way. There is a symmetry. Okay, the next thing I have to define is what is called a Fourier algebra. So von Neumann algebras of this sort, there is an operation of composition on the pre-dual, on the states. The states actually form an algebra. This algebra is called a Fourier algebra. To define that, well, let me kind of go through it very quickly. This is just a notation here. A function on the group, which acts this way, is this. Then any status of this form, but then if you write down what that is, comes down to the convolution between these two functions. So essentially, state is given by one function, right? If you do the convolution here, that's just one function on the group. And then any element which is of this sort, two elements in L2, convolute them like this. Well, this now is called A of G, and it is actually a subset the continuous functions on the group, which are 0 at infinity. Okay, and then to define the product, I need this unitary operator here. This is what is called multiplicative unitary and made famous by Barsk and Dalis and many other people. I probably mispronounced the names. But this is what it does, and it has this amazing, well, not amazing, it has this property, obeys a pentagonal identity, coherence identity, essentially, this guy. And this is the guy which, the guy responsible for the composition of states. Here is the explanation how this happens. Let me skip the explanation at the moment. But essentially, the final result is this. If you have a convolution of two elements of L2 like this, which belong to A of G defined there, this is, in fact, an isomorphism of commutative Banach algebras with the pre-dual. Okay, so from now on, every state here, every element of the pre-dual is just an element of a commutative Banach algebra, right, on the group. Okay, I can explain the same in a slightly more sophisticated way. This was the Wohlbrau way, if you want. Here's the Highbrow way of saying the same. Well, we have this operation on the representation, could be extended, and so therefore any of these von Neumann algebras on the group are actually Hopf von Neumann algebras. And then there is, here's the hard part, there is an identification between the dual of the projective tensor space product of the pre-duals here with the von Neumann algebra product, which allows me to essentially define the dual of this guy. And this dual is this delta. And so now here's the operation on the Fourier algebra in a very high-tech way, essentially on one line. But you can do the W operator if you want to really understand how this works. And this is what is going to be important for us here. I can say how this guy works on operators. On generators of the Fourier algebra. If we have a generator of the Fourier algebra like this, just essentially a product of two functions, what delta does is it identifies the arguments by Hopf and multiplies them. So I didn't explain this before, but what happens here is that W operator is some kind of feedback, which actually not the W operator, the transpose of the W operator, which acts on the states. Some kind of feedback, and essentially we have cut elimination, as we'll see soon. Okay? And in fact, this operation is not only a commutative Banach algebra, it is what is called a completely contractive Banach algebra. It actually contracts the knot. Okay. This is all available also in the C star category, and in this case, instead of working with the Fourier algebra, the proper object to work with will be the Fourier astuteness algebra. I probably mispronounced the name very badly. Okay, but unfortunately, these von Neumann algebras of no interest whatsoever. They lead typically to type 2 1 factors. And we need type 3 factors. And the type 3 factors come from groupoids. And fortunately, on the groupoids, we have something similar. Now, the left regular representation is actually on a Hilbert space bundle like that. So now this is a groupoid, in fact, a measured groupoid. There is a measure on the unit of the groupoid. We have a notion of left regular representation. Needless to say, there is also a right regular representation. But now we have this commutative algebra sitting inside, which is essentially the space of bounded functions on the unit. And so now instead of this being a Hopf von Neumann algebra, what we have is this operator delta here, but it acts from not the tensor product anymore, it acts from what is called a fiber product. And the fiber product is over this commutative von Neumann algebra. And so now we have delta like this, and this is called by some people Hopf von Neumann bimodule. And for two elements of the pre-dual, again, we have a tensor between them, but this operation is no longer global, but it is densely defined. And we can define using the tensor and the delta, we can define our operation on the pre-dual again, which is again densely defined. And then we have the Fourier algebra of the groupoid, which is again not a global operation, just densely defined. And so we have a commutative algebra structure, in fact, again, contractive Banach algebra structure on the pre-dual, on the states. OK, this was the math. Let's do some physics.
at star sub mu, is it a pullback up above?
Basically, it's a pullback, yes. But the hard part is here, and there's no high-tech way to define this. I haven't seen this in the literature. Could exist, right? But it's a bit messy here. Okay, so now here's the physics. This is essentially, again, 45-year-old work by Araki. This is going to be the free boson field. The Hilbert space is the L2 space on the mass group point with some measure on it, Lorentz invariant measure. We have a real linear embedding of the space of test functions inside the Hilbert space. And this embedding is very nice in the following sense. If we have an open bounded region in Minkowski space, when using the embedding of the test space functions in the Hilbert space, we can define subspaces, which are real subspaces of the Hilbert space, which correspond to regions in space-time. Okay, so now for every bounded open region in space-time, we have a real subspace of the Hilbert space of the system, K of O. It has very nice properties. We can define the causal complement of that bounded open region like this. We can define also a complementary real subspace. The complementation is done by the imaginary part of the Hilbert product. And here's why this is nice. There is one to an isomorphism between bounded open regions of space-time. And this subspace is in the Hilbert space. The real subspace is in the Hilbert space, which is a isomorphism of complemented lattices. In particular, this happens. On the causal complement, the subspace of the causal complement is the same thing as the complement of the subspace of this region. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
H, because it's going to be a...
No, this is on the level of Hilbert spaces. So this takes, smears, takes the test function, smears all the fields, and then this guy here, F is the test function, and then we can embed it into the Hilbert space, into the masked Kepler void. This is, yes, there's another map, but this is the one which is on the level of Hilbert space. Okay, so then we have another map, which is the second quantization algebra map. We have a Hilbert space, and now we have these tons of real subspaces sitting inside, right? All of them coding regions of space-time, essentially. And then we can do a second quantization, essentially take the value unitaries which correspond to this subspace, and then generate this one-Neumann algebra corresponding to the subspace. And then here is another map, which is an isomorphism of complemented lattices. The one-Neumann algebra of a subspace is inside the one-Neumann algebra of that subspace, if and only if the subspace is embedded like that. The one-Neumann algebra of a union post of subspaces is the closure of the union of the one-Neumann algebras. The one-Neumann algebra of the intersection is the intersection of the one-Neumann algebras. And most importantly, this theorem's about half a page in Araki's papers, and this theorem is another 120 pages. So this is the hard part. Right? The one-Neumann algebra of the complement is the complementation of the one-Neumann algebra. And so if you want, what happened here is the space-time structure, the causality, has been coded, first of all, into the real subspaces of the Hilbert space, but now we're also coding it into the net of one-Neumann algebra. Okay, the net of one-Neumann algebra now contains the causal structure. Okay, well, this one is really not necessary, but let me go through it very, very quickly. If you have a subspace, which is a sum of two others, I don't know why both of them are primes, one of them should be fellow prime, then what happens is a plus here becomes a tensor there. Okay, so this is an operation which takes plus to tensor. It's actually important because, let me say this right now, and I'll try to justify it later, the geometry of interaction, which will appear in later slides, is essentially exponentiation of the geometry of interaction, which appears in Girard's papers via this map. It is additive there, but in in here it will be multiplicative, and that's the reason. Any of these Hilbert spaces essentially splits into four pieces, like this. This could be shown, and correspondingly, the von Neumann algebra and its complements split into four pieces as well. They're represented in standard form, and here is why people say type 3 a lot of time. The first piece is a type 3 factor. The second piece is B, the complete, all the bounded operators on this Hilbert space. The first piece is 1, and there is an abelian component. And then the complement is this. The complement of this R, which is again type 3, needless to say, then the 1 which corresponds to this, then the B here, and then the same abelian part involved. There is the result by multiple people. I think the final result is written up by some part of the Italian group. Needless to say, now we have a map from subspaces to von Neumann algebras, so we can look at, there is some topology on the Grassmannian of real subspaces, and the type 3-1, so this here appears most frequently, okay, not guaranteed to be, but in general, this will be a type 3-1 factor.
Question, if you write K prime as kind of a causal complement of K, what does it exactly mean? Subspace K, what is K prime?
K essentially, again, is the subspace which tests, which calls how we embedded the test functions inside the Hilbert space. It picks up things like, in this part of space-time, I will allow to only work with creation operators or creation and annihilation operators. In other words, is the vacuum for this particular subspace cyclic or not? And if we overdo it and include on some subspace, both creation and annihilation operators, this is going to happen. If we pick up neither, this is going to happen. And if we do it just right in such a way that the vacuum is cyclic, this is going to happen. I forgot at the moment how that happens, but that happens as well. Okay, so this is the structure. This is what is called it. In other words, this here only happens because we have selected our test functions in such a way that they pick both creation and annihilation operators at this particular space-time point. Okay, so this was the end of number 2, and so now number 3. I don't know how much I should say about this. Let me go very quickly through it. This is one of these things where people were very excited for a while. I probably would say something politically incorrect here, but linear logic is good for a variety of reasons, although not as hot as it was 8, 9 years ago. It essentially is a slightly refinement of classical logic. Classical logic could be embedded in here, but I'm missing some of the connections. There are no exponentials here, so not really. We're going to consider only this part of linear logic. It essentially has axioms. We're allowed to put together derivations by cut. We have two multiplicative connections. This here is a tensor on the left and right. This is how we put formulas together on the right. There is a AND, which is additive, like this. And it is called with. There is a PAR, which is a disjunction. And then there is another disjunction. So essentially two conjunctions, two disjunctions. And then it has a involutive negation. Essentially, we're allowed to take a formula from the right, push it to the left. Needless to say, the involutive negation switches this guy with this guy, the width with the plus, and the tensor with the bar. Okay, so now let's try to code this into von Neumann algebras, hopefully making some contact with the Araki stuff, the AQFT. So first of all, an axiom is going to be interpreted as a pair of von Neumann algebras A and its commutant in standard form on a Hilbert space. Important, because we need the involutive negation that has to be in standard form. A right-sided sequence is going to be interpreted like this. So now we have a number of formulas. It's a commutative von Neumann algebras acting from the same Hilbert space. negation means that we take, if we have this sequence here of formulas, and it's interpreted by a number of Bonneuillon algebras on the left and right, well, we can take this Bonneuillon algebra if we want to move the formula on the left and replace it with the commutant on the other side. So negation here is a commutant. Proof of an axiom, well, this is going to be now, this couple, pair of Bonneuillon algebras, but on top of that, we're going to keep track of states. So the state is going to be the proof. Okay? So this is slightly unusual. Previously, I don't think, well, this is unusual in several ways. First of all, formulas are algebras, not operators, but all of them. On top of that, again, proofs are now coded with states. So we don't have this bare axiom anymore. Every axiom is labeled with the corresponding state. And let me remind you that a state, these are represented in standard form, this really is just a pair of vectors on the Hilbert space. And then if we have a proof of a sequence, that will be, again, some Bonneuillon algebras on the left, on the right, and then the state. On all of them, they're acting from the, on the same Hilbert space. And this is the state on all of them because it is of this form. They're just two vectors on the Hilbert space. OK, so now here is the interpretation. We have to see what the connections are doing. Let me look at these ones on the right. Okay. What happens here is essentially it's not quite settled in my head how to say this, in a sense how to phrase it in English. But here is the algebra essentially, and I'll try the English as well. If we have a number of Bonneuillon algebras in some space-time region, and then a number of them all commuting. Sorry, in different space-time regions, but we discover yet another part of space somewhere, and we want to put them together. They're uncorrelated. This is how we put them together. We take the product of these two, and then for the others, there are a number of Bonneuillon algebras here. We have to recopy them, rather, we have to extend them to act also here with one, and then on this side, we extend them with one on the left, in such a way that they remain commuting. If we have a number of Bonneuillon algebras, including two of them being on complementary space-time regions, well, we can put these two together and make this guy, which is essentially the two Bonneuillon algebras generate now one on the space-time region, which is the sum of these two, well, sum in the appropriate sense. Okay, and then we have appropriate operations on left. We have to check multiple things here. So essentially, what is happening here is we can put Bonneuillon algebras together in two different ways, depending if we have tracked, if they're correlated, we're tracking a common state for them. In this case, this is the appropriate way to put them together. And if they're uncorrelated, that's the appropriate way to put them together. So that's the difference between par and tensor. Tensor puts together algebras of observables which are uncorrelated, and puts together algebras of observables for which we have correlations, tracking common information. For this to be working, we need consistency with negation. If we move this on the left and apply these operations, so on the left, this guy becomes this guy. We have an intersection here, so the interpretation is badly broken down. The tensor on the right and the tensor on the left are very different. It is a tensor here, but then it is an intersection here. And similarly here, the interpretation of power on left and right are very, very, very different. We need consistency of negation. If we move the formulas, this guy here, the power has become a tensor on the complemented Bonneuillon algebras, and this actually is true for this reason. Here, we're augmenting the Bonneuillon algebras with one, but on this side with B, and that works out well, because the commutator of this is that. And here is the most non-trivial part, which is that the tensor product, the complement of the tensor product of Bonneuillon algebras is the product of the complement. This is, in fact, why one of the reasons to meet the Turkish-Sakti model of theory was initiated. It's a hard fact. But true. Okay, so then notice another thing. Tensor here on the right is just tensor in the usual von Neumann algebra sense. And tensor on the left is an intersection. But look, if you augment the algebras on the left, as they have to be on the left with B, then this intersection is nothing but a tensor again. So on both left and right, the linear logic tensor is an actual tensor, but what matters is how the algebras are sitting inside. So if you're looking here at algebraic morphisms, this is going to collapse, probably to some kind of a compact loss category. But if we're looking at the spatial morphisms, how things are sitting inside the Hilbert space, this is, although isomorphic, although these things are isomorphic, they're not the same. In fact, all the physics is in the isomorphism, in some sense. So algebraic morphisms are good, but spatial ones are better. Okay, so I kind of made my second point then. Let me work on the first point. Well, you can do the same thing with the additive connectives. Here, let's look on this side. This is just a plus, and then we copy the common context via 1 on C2. So yet, this now is a third way to put the von Neumann algebras together. What we do is we put them together with a plus if their context is common, right? They're not under the same state, but they have common context. So now there are three different ways we're putting them together. One is tensor, one they're commuting and there is no correlations. One is par, one they're commuting, but they're correlated. And now these are non-correlated, but they have common context. And then there is the Seeley operation here, which is if we have a von Neumann algebra, we can add anything, but then the zero state on it, so it might as well not be there. And needless to say, again, there is a consistency with negation. Okay, so then we have to interpret cut, which is this rule. And essentially what we need is how to put together states, right? In fact, the most interesting case is the cut between axioms. So starting with state phi here and psi here, we have to come up with a state on the same axiom, but now some kind of a composed state. And so what we really need here is commutative associative composition on the Fred rule, and you already saw what that is. Okay. So the cut is the composition of states. Okay, the only thing remaining to be done then is, well, there are many things remaining to be done, but to complete my first point, I have to show you that this is actually invariant of cut elimination. Okay, so let's start with this. Non-principal formulas, this proof and this proof have to be the same. Okay, so this is moving cut through tensor. Here's cut above tensor. So let's look at what we have here. I'm going to do this in the group case. In the groupoid case, I'm going to tell you why it's not ready yet. But in the group case, it works out okay. So all of these are group von Neumann algebras. This one in particular for some group G1. This one in particular for some group G2, and this one in particular for some group G3. Everything else here is in the commutant of A. So whatever number of von Neumann algebras are here, they're all in A prime, in the commutant. And then, well, I can label the state here by a element of the pre-dual of this group, sorry, element of the Fourier algebra of this group, of A. This now here has two groups on it, B and C, so that will be a function which depends on both. And then this here, the state here is a function on Z, on the third group. And then how do we put the states together? Well, that was on the previous slide. But essentially, if we put them with a tensor, we essentially multiply them. And if we put them together with cut, what we have to do is multiply, but also identify the variables. That's what cut was for. That's the composition in the pre-dual. And so now, this cut elimination here, from this formula to this formula, comes down to this. Multiply the three of them. But in this case, multiply these two first and then identify. And in that case, we'll multiply these two, sorry, identify here and then multiply with that. So it becomes a more or less triviality. Although if you work with these functions here, it is a triviality. But if you work with the corresponding Hermitian operators, the density matrices, this is not trivial at all. What happens is this W operator, the Bahr-Skandalis operator, provides feedback and produces for you the new Hermitian, the new density matrix from the two density matrices, which are available. So cut here is very easy, but only because we have this identification with the algebra of functions. I didn't say multiple things here, which is in some cases in these formulas I'm working with actual elements of the Fourier algebra. Some cases I'm working only with the generators. Doesn't really matter. The formulas are extendable. Okay, so I'm going to make that not going to make that distinction at all. Okay, this will take about 2 minutes to finish. Here is another case. So this is cut powerful cut. Well, this is even more trivial. Absolutely nothing happens. So this is true by default, if you want. Let's go through another one. So now cut through plus F plus zero, because adding this formula B here, well, at the zero state, right? So this comes down to this F plus zero times G, with identify these variables, is the same thing as F times G plus zero, which is a triviality. Here is this case where cut is pushed through with. This is just distributivity of multiplication of formulas. Then there is this case. So now principal formulas, meaning that we're cutting between formulas which have just been produced by the proof. So this is tensor right, tensor left. This comes down to this. This formula from here, sorry, this state from here, this state from here, and this state from here. And we can either put these two together via a multiplication and then cut, or we can cut first against the G and then add the F to it and cut. And that's the same as well. Okay, so here is the embarrassment. I think this is more of a problem of cut elimination in linear logic than of the interpretation here, but this is what happens here. If we cut with left and right against each other, the prescription in linear logic is that we get that, but we throw the B here out, completely out of the picture. And for some reason, that doesn't work out, right? So F times U is okay, but then we have G, which corresponds to this B, which is not here. So, but I'm not really worried about that too much, because I think the linear algebra expert should probably, put help me here by saying, well, let's keep the B and then things are okay. Why do we throw the B away? And then the final thing is, I didn't say that, but for these cut elimination procedures, we're identifying variables, but there is these formulas, these functions are always keeping track of the cut. The variable is there, we identify them, but it does not disappear. It only disappears in one case. Here is where the variables disappear when we're cutting like that. Before that, although, let me try to explain this on this case. Although we don't have either A or B here in the final formula, the variables for A and B are still in the functions. They are not going anywhere. The cut, the fact that there was a cut in this formula is kept by the function itself. There's neither A nor B here, but the variables are still there. The only time a variable actually disappears is here, when we had a variable for this and a variable for this, and we identified them. And so now, instead of two variables, we only have one. OK, so this was more or less what I wanted to show you. Let me briefly kind of summarize what happened here. I think that state spaces and operator algebras are interesting. They have a very interesting operation, which is not really studied much in physics, although studied a lot in mathematics. it is a commutative Banach algebra in many cases, including in all cases of physical interest. The algebras of local observables in quantum field theory are groupoid. They're all representations of groupoids, measured groupoids. For that reason, they always have a multiplication on their states. The Fourier algebras, or if you want to work with sister algebras, the Fourier tilches algebras are always there. And this operation has not been explored. I don't know if this is a convincing application of that operation, but here is an attempt. And the second thing is the distinction between algebraic morphisms and spatial morphisms. Algebras could be absolutely the same if you look at them with respect to algebraic morphisms, but they will be amazingly different if you work with the spatial morphisms. Okay, let me stop here.
Are there any questions, comments, or are there any questions during the talk?
If you have a model of the, well, so if you have invariance under cut elimination, can you go a step further and say that you have a categorical model of multiplicative additive linear logic is a star autonomous category with products and co-products? Mm-hmm. So do you have that?
No, that's not there.
So that means you're missing some commutative conversions and other such things.
Yeah.
So do you have some description of which equations you do satisfy and which you don't? Because we know in sort of the Girard-style geometry of interaction, pretty much you understand what kind of equations we do have, and it gets something like a combinatory algebra rather than a, you know, so you don't have full closure under substitution and so forth. I mean, is there a similar situation here? Or?
I haven't looked at it at all. Phil Scott keeps asking me this question for several months now, but I don't have the answer anymore.
It's the obvious question.
It's not done yet, so I can't say.
And I suppose another point is, are there interesting examples where you write down a proof and you do cut elimination in it, and its interpretation in this model, in some sense, reproduces an interesting calculation that you might do motivated by the physics you were mentioning? I mean, do you have anything of that nature?
Well, so that's the other thing which I'm working on that precisely these days, and on a very particular model of free Fermi fields, and in that case, it looks like, well, first of all, again, the cut elimination you saw here is actually exponentiation of the cut elimination in your paper and the Girard papers. And let me just say, I don't know yet either. So I don't know. Very, very, very much a physical interpretation of some sort. I can again explain it via the bar scandalous double operator, what that is. On mathematical level, I can't explain it on physical level.
I'm very fascinated by this, actually. I like the study of the state being the coolant. Yeah. And but here in these formulas showing cut elimination for these different cases, you drop the states. In notation at least, turnstiles do not carry a state label. But it's implicit all the time.
Oh yeah. So okay. In this case, this f would be belongs to that. That's the state described. This function describes the state here, and yeah. This function describes the state there. Okay. So yes, I drop them, but there.
So we're done? Class?
Just to clarify, so your comment on the relationship between local algebraic quantum field theory and groupoids only applies to free fields.
That is correct.
Is there any hope for a more general validity of this formulation?
Well, yes. There, of course, you kind of saw the result that for free fields, these are typically type 3-1 factors. And there, as you very well know, results more general than that, which, not for free fields, claim that these are typically type 3-1 factors, not for free fields. I don't know this result very well, but I know the mathematics side of this. Here is the claim. The only hyperfinite 3-1 factor is a groupoid bonding one algebra. In fact, any hyperfinite bonding one algebra is a groupoid bonding one algebra. So all of the hyperfinite ones are groupoid ones. And then let me link back to the physics where we claim that a algebra of local observables has to be hyperfinite for physical reasons. So yes, all of them are groupoid.
Now with groupoid, you get it this way, completely arbitrary, I think.
Ah, even better. So
now even worse. I mean, the fact that it's a type 3-1 for Lorentz algebra can be realized as a groupoid algebra.
Okay, so
unless you have an explicit construction, which you have for a free field case.
Yeah, that is right. Okay. First of all, for all these hyperfinite algebras, it is the same groupoid every time. What differs is the measure on the units. It is the same groupoid. In fact, I can describe it very explicitly. How that relates to physics? Which measure corresponds to which part of physics? That's a very hard question. So,
any more questions, comments? No.